This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi.
Featuring defense attorney, Hidden Killers daily contributor, and host of the Defense Diaries podcast, Bob Motta.
Another, you know, thing in this whole case is we're not going to have cameras in the courtroom, and that's, you know, that's fairly normal. But there's no transcripts of these hearings. And so, I mean, is that even a thing? I mean, is that like, can you have hearings and have them non-documented in any way, shape, or form other than people just like kind of taking notes?
I think that ultimately people are they have a misunderstanding. So from what I understand in Allen County, they have a recording system.
Okay.
So they have an audio recording system. So the hearing was documented. And so I think what she was saying with no transcripts is that she wasn't going to prepare one, you know, that was going to go out to the public. That doesn't mean, because there has to be a record for the appellate level. If there's a conviction, there has to be a record of it. So that exists in the world. And as a matter of fact, you know, I've ordered the transcript because I was sitting there all day for 9 hours trying to write down as much as I could. And you're not going to be able to write down everything. You know, you want to make sure that you can trust your information, what you're writing down. It was the sound in there in terms of, you know, it was just a very large room with a very high ceiling. It was difficult to hear. Hennessy couldn't hear anything. You know, so I'm going to get the transcript because I want to know every word that was said. Not so much from the first hearing, because my position on the first hearing is it was a huge waste of time.
Sure.
You know, it has nothing to do with the underlying trial for the girls and Richard Allen. And it's really just McClelland trying to punish the defense counsel. So ultimately, you know, if she decides she's going to give him jail, like a few days in jail or something like that, or a fine, that's what it'll be. You know, I don't think that they proved anything. Mm-hmm. I don't think that she should. I think that ultimately, depending on what the penalty is, will decide whether or not Baldwin and Rosie are going to appeal it. Because Rosie didn't do anything. Like, mm-hmm. they proved nothing against Brad Rosie. And these two guys are both in separate law firms. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't practice in the same office. They have private, you know, private law firms, and they're in different buildings. Mm-hmm. So like, they showed nothing against Brad Rosie at all. And whatever the case may be with Andrew Baldwin, with respect to the leak, it just wasn't intentional. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, like, she's got an affidavit to that fact. The guy that did it has been charged with conversion.
Yeah.
So he's got he's got his own criminal case pending stemming from that. So I don't know, but that was kind of the long and the mm-hmm. short of the,
And at the end of the afternoon. And at the end of the day, the evidence is there. That picture is still there. It will be, you know, brought in as evidence into the case. It's not like it was, I don't know, erased, taped over, destroyed, because that's the other aspect of this that they've been looking at is the 70 plus hours of material that they had the first week that they accidentally taped over. I mean, I can kind of buy it. They don't seem to be the most on the up and up of being, I don't know, professional or attention to detail in any way, shape, or form. So I could see some idiots accidentally taping over things that you need, but I don't know what was, I don't know, was that intentional and what kind, I mean, how are they handling that? I know that there's, you know, they're trying to have that motion to dismiss over some of those merits, but is that, you know, where is that going to go? Tell me about what happened there.
So, yeah, that was definitely the more interesting of the two motions, in my opinion, mm-hmm. Because it did relate to the actual trial that we're all so interested in, whereas this other thing was ancillary. So that motion was, again, filed by the defense. Baldwin puts on his case, and the first person that he calls to the stand is a former Rushville police officer of 20-plus years, Todd Click. If you're not familiar with the Delphi case at all, in October, or not, strike that, on September of last year, the defense filed what's called a notice of a Franks hearing. Mm-hmm. And part and parcel of that, they filed a 136-page memo. In that memo, they outlined that there were three cops that had continued on an investigation path that was vastly different from what the Unified Command, which was the core investigative group of Delphi, was investigating. And these guys, it comes out, were all investigating what they considered to be some white nationalists that had kind of co-opted some form of Norse paganism as part of like their crew. They all kind of liked Vikings, I guess. And, you know, and ultimately these three cops, when Richard Allen is arrested, the cop Todd Click, who's testifying here on this day, is like, what? They just, you know, he said he read through the PCA. And I think his exact words in my notes were that he was, let me see. Oh, I want to get these.
Sure.
I want to get this right because it was great when he said it in terms of the strength of the PCA. Mm-hmm. He's like, I was incredibly, hold on, bear with me. I want to find it.
Yeah.
These are all handwritten, man.
Yeah. No, it's very compelling. I mean, testimony.
Yeah. It's given it, here. It's something. It's something. All right. So where's he? It's got to be when he gets towards the end, when he gets to the rest. Okay. Look at an attorney. Okay. All right. Okay. So this is it. So at some point in the questioning, so the way that Baldwin was handling it is that he was getting in all the evidence that was contained in that memo about what these cops had been able to uncover.
Yeah.
And the state was continually objecting, saying, look, we're here about an interview with Brad Holder, who happens to be one of the individuals that is one of these alleged white nationalists that has somehow co-opted the, you know, Norse paganism religion and intertwined it with what their belief system is. And, you know, apparently what had happened is that the state, from the day that the girls are found, which is February 14th of 2017, up through the 17th, had written over every single interview during those days. And so the defense continued, you know, it's like, in the argument from the defense is, look, Your Honor, like, we have to show bad faith from the state in order to prevail on this particular motion. And in order for us to do that, we're not going to be able to get the cops to acknowledge, yeah, we intentionally deleted it because we had arrested somebody else. It wasn't related to that. And, you know, maybe that interview had something on it that we didn't want them to hear. I mean, they're not going to admit that.
Yeah.
So what he had to show is that there was very compelling evidence pointing to other people as being the perpetrators of the crime that they were trying to hide. That, you know, so Gull actually gave him a lot of leeway.
Want to listen ad-free? Want advanced access to all of our interviews before anyone else?
Become a True Crime Today Premium Plus subscriber on Apple Podcasts.
You get every episode commercial-free,
so you can binge on true crime
until you can binge no more.
Search True Crime Today Premium Plus on Apple Podcasts now, or go to our podcast page and sign up now.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast next.